Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Republic Education Call for the United States of America and our Republican form of self-governance for August 19th, 2025 at 8:30 p.m. I'm Phyllis Marie, and I will get this call started with a reading from Psalms 131, verse 2, Psalms 21, verse 6, and Psalms 37, 7. I continually call you to closeness with me. I know the depth and breadth of your need for me. I can read the emptiness of your thoughts when they wander away from me. I offer rest for your soul as well as refreshment for your mind and body. As you increasingly find fulfillment in me, other pleasures become less important. Knowing me intimately is like having a private wellspring of joy within you. This spring flows freely from my throne of grace, so your joy is independent of circumstances. Waiting in my presence keeps you connected to me, aware of all that I offer you. If you feel any deficiency, you need to refocus your attention on me. This is how you trust me in the moments of your life. We, the people of the Republic, are peaceful, lawful, and private. When in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another and to assume among the powers of the earth a separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. And that is the first two paragraphs of our Declaration of Independence. And let me get Daryl unmuted here. Okay, Daryl, the floor is yours.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. Well, welcome everyone to tonight's call. Tonight we've got a few documents that are attached, and one is the one that I got up on the screen is why you don't want an attorney. As here's from 7 Corpus Juris Circum, and it says attorney and client. The first duty is to the courts, and the public is not your client. And whenever the duties of his client conflict with those who owes as an officer of the court in the administration of justice, the former must yield to the latter. So this court-appointed attorney is not there to help you. His first duty is to the state of, which is really a subcorporation of the corporate United States, that is defined in Title 28, 3002 at Section 15, where it says that the United States means a federal corporation. And that state of is just a franchise of that head corporation. And so the attorney, his first obligations is to that, to his master, and that's the one that pays him. And another one here is these documents are all attached. Here's the jurisdiction and authority, 28 U.S.C. subsection 1746 at section 1, and this is where it's executed without the United States, and it gives you, as a sovereign, recognized authority and standing to speak as a living authority in your own affairs. It strips the state's presumption of power over your documents by removing the necessity of a notary and gives you equitable jurisdiction, power to operate, rebut, and administer with lawful effect. So I give no authority to anybody in this federal banking government under forgery and unlawful strikes, unlawfully strikes my officer without my permission for labor credits and self-gain and corporate affairs from the bank without my consent, with which are the Creator as my witness, with the Creator as my witness. So under the authority of a state citizen, only needs a titled autograph and are with the Creator as your witness. So as a sovereign, you don't need a notary public for any lawful documents or statements against the government. You just got to learn how to write your autograph form different for different jurisdictions and contracts under titled grammar. And remember, the authority of Congress is really laid out in Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17, where it talks about that Congress shall have the power to exercise exclusive legislation in all cases whatsoever over such district not exceeding 10 miles square. But there is an exception to that by the like to exercise like authority over all places purchased by the consent of the legislature of the state, which in the same shall be for erection of forts, magazines, arsenals, dockyards, and other needful buildings. So that's the exception. And for most people throughout this country that are getting pulled over for traffic tickets or any type of infraction, they're trying to hold you to a statute. And statutes aren't really law. They're really corporate policy by code. And it's all copyrighted. And therefore, they're limited to the authority of Congress. And that's where, even in the franchise, it's still limited to Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17. So if you are charged for this statute outside of that 10-mile square, if you weren't on a military base or on some fort or a dockyard or one of their needful buildings, you are not on federal territory. And therefore, they really have no jurisdiction to charge you with anything if you never injured nobody, if there wasn't an injured party. And this is where in the Seventh Amendment, you know, it talks about that in suits of common law where the value of controversy shall exceed $20, the right of a trial by jury shall be preserved. And there's no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise reexamined in any court of the United States other than the in accordance with the rules of common law. So do you know anybody that's ever had a trial by jury? They've all been given jury trials. And a jury trial is where the judge, he'll tell the jury how to make their decision based upon the jury instructions given to them. And those are definitely, in my experience, were very biased. The jury instructions that I suggested were never accepted. They only accepted the ones from the prosecutor that would make it biased towards you. And then they direct the verdict, you know, to basically limit what gets put in front of the jury. But in a trial by jury, this is where the jury has the right to make their determination based upon the law and the fact. Where in a jury trial, the judge will basically instruct the jury what the law is. And he will say the statutes are the law that they're supposed to administer their verdict on. But in a trial by jury, that jury has the right to determine whether it's a valid law, whether it's in compliance with the Constitution, whether the venue is correct, and they have a they make their determination based upon the facts and the evidence that's presented before them. And this is what they've taken away from us back under Lincoln in Executive Order or General Order 100 and Lever Code 13, where they put the legislative law above common law. And this is where under Lincoln they basically declared martial rule. And so we've been under this here military jurisdiction, operating under Admiralty Maritime jurisdiction ever since. And it really was accelerated in after March 9, 1933, when in Roosevelt's day, they declared all persons to be enemies of the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof. But, you know, what is a person? You know, this person is this here, it's called an ins legis, which is an entity that is created solely by the law. And so what they did is they basically got you to register your offspring when they were born, and they called that, and they put it on a certificate of birth. First a certificate of live birth, and then it was registered into the county and was given these Dun & Bradstreet numbers and tied in and then warehoused in the District of Columbia. So that person was declared an enemy of the United States and now is used as the collateral to replace the gold. You've probably heard that phrase that talked about that baby is as good as gold. Well, it replaced the gold through that registration, and now is used as collateral for the public debt. But we have a right as basically the originator of that at our birth when we were born to reclaim that that security that was created. But when you don't know nothing about it and you don't know the procedure to get this done, it becomes a real challenge. So we're trying to understand what the truth is and the facts so that we can be set free, because it's only the truth that's going to set us free. So we got a lot of things that we've been uncovering here in the past, and Sandy from Texas and people that she's been working with really close have uncovered that all this here business model, these different business models have been put in the Patent and Trademark Office, you know, through other agreements. And this War Powers, the basically the Shepherdtown and Maternity Act, which basically required the registration of a birth, all these business models have been put into place, and this is what is being carried out. And this is where they're making it legal to do things which would otherwise be unlawful, because nobody has the right over your life, liberty, or the pursuit of happiness. If you are not under authority, you have authority over nothing. And the created can never be greater than the creator. So all our rights are inherent from our creator. And that cannot be denied. That cannot be taken away from you in any way. You know, you can kind of compromise that if you want. But in order for a contract to be a contract, which they hold this as a, I call minimum contact contract, or presumed contracts. These are all the different types of contracts that they're applying. But in this here contract that they're holding and using that to trade with, you know, they have basically held us into this here, you know, realm of being looked at as that name is what is registered and is declared the enemy. And when you go into a court, they'll call your name. And when you answer to it, they will just by presumption assume that you are that person or you're speaking on behalf of that person that's declared an enemy. And this is where we have to know who we are, what our rights are, and have the ability to defend them. And this is very important. But, you know, when there's fraud involved, and one thing, there's a few things that make up a requirement. It has to have two wedding signatures. There must be basically consent of the parties. There must be full disclosure and a meeting of the minds. And, you know, we know that there's no infant that has the ability to contract. So all this is done under presumption. We've been tricked, we've been conned into a system that has been designed to enslave us. So tonight, I don't know if Derek's going to make it. He's had a little health issue. He had a stroke here a couple weeks ago and been really hard to contact him. But last week he said he thought he would be able to be here, but he hasn't confirmed that. So whether he is able to show up or not tonight, we'll see. But I did send him a text and asked him to please confirm. So we had it up on the screen here for that he would be speaking tonight, but I guess we'll have to forgive him for not confirming, but I don't know what his situation is. So with that, we're going to have Sandy Smith and Tony are going to be speaking and sharing some of this. And down here on the bottom, attached also, is basically a notice of liability. And this is basically a guideline. It's a template format instructions is basically what it is. It's a notice of liability and claim, and then you follow up that with that as a default. But it tells you the things that need to be in this here notice of liability. Oops. And so you can kind of go through it. And we have to know why we're doing these things, and we have to be able to defend what we're doing. So it's good that that we know why we are saying these things. So if you get called to answer for it, that you have the ability to answer for it. So with that, what this here system has done through the Patent and Trademark Office is they established all these business models. And that's what brought in all this here corporate policy and all this, because they have allowed this here corporation to replace the Constitutional Republic. And the corporation is basically operating under codes and statutes. And basically implemented by the Bar Association, which has been given power of attorney. And that's all in the Patent and Trademark Office, where you can search it. And Sandy has done a tremendous amount of study in that field, along with many of the others that she has been working with. So, Sandy, if you want to step up to the plate, you got the floor. Sandy, are you unmuted?
Okay, can you hear me?
There you are. Yep, we can hear you. Okay. You got the floor.
Okay, well, I was just going to kind of reiterate what you were saying, is that first and foremost, I was going to use one of the tools in our toolbox to help bring out all of this. And first and foremost, I am not an attorney, and this is not legal advice. These are all things that myself and other people have personally done and personally researched and experienced in this, and especially in the Patent and Trademark Office. But just as Daryl said, in order to be able to use these tools effectively, you have to really know who you are. You have to know exactly who you are and what you stand for, but you have to understand why you're doing something. It's just like on this notice of liability, you have to understand, because nobody nobody is going to come to save you in as bad a shape as, well, the way it looks that our country is in, and everybody is, you know, looking to the elected officials to save us. Well, these elected officials can do so much, but it is up to us, the individual people, to stand up and back these people up, to take a stand to save ourselves, to save our country on this. And that's why it is so important to understand who we are, that God created us as living men and women, American natives, that we're not citizens of Colombia or any of the corporate franchises, and that we have to come in privately and peacefully and bring forth a notice of liability to hold these people that have broken their trust, broken their oath of office, violated the Constitution, to come in and hold them accountable for the actions that they have done. And we have to understand those things. And then our other goal is we have to try to decide about why we're doing these things. What are we trying to accomplish? Are we trying to accomplish, you know, a status change, give back to society, right the wrongs that have been done? Is it for protection, or is, you know, are we trying to break into the our trust fund, supposedly, that has been set up for us? We have, you know, you have to decide why you're doing something and how far you're willing to reach out there and work to accomplish this. And one of the things, the notice of liability, and the reason that myself and my team members chose this particular tool to use, is because Congress is the ones that is basically responsible for everything that goes on in this country. They are responsible for the laws. They are responsible for treaties. They are responsible for the financial institutions. And so they are one of the main ones that you need to start holding them accountable. And I would just like to throw this out there. How many people in this group have you contacted, your congressman or your senator, or as far as that goes, your state representative? Or do you even know who they are? Have you called them? Have you emailed them? Have you called them out on any particular thing that has happened that they have done? I mean, if you don't do that, then they think everybody is, you know, in total agreement with them, and they run on. And that's why things get so broken, because nobody holds them accountable for anything. And this notice of liability, which is very, very strong, because you can hold them accountable on any laws, oaths, constitutional rights, God's laws, even on their job responsibilities that they have violated, and that you can hold them accountable for allowing all these undisclosed agreements taking control of your intellectual property, because they are the ones that sit in the control seat to allow these things to go on. And it's very important that when you're doing this notice of liability, which I urge everybody to at least do one notice of liability and send it to, well, I would probably send it to a congressman or a senator. They try to limit you to say, oh, well, if you don't live in my district, you can't send me anything. Well, that's not true. That is just their way to get around of, well, if you're not in my district, I don't have to answer you. But the fact of the matter is, all of these congressmen and senators sit in meetings and they vote and they pass laws and bills and treaties and everything else that affect every single one of us individually. So with that kind of power, yes, you can hold them accountable because they have done an act, or even if it was a vote, even if they voted for something and what they voted for impacted your life in a negative way, you can still hold them accountable. So don't let them try to tell you, oh, well, you're not in my district, you can't do this. Well, yes, you can, because you voted on this. You ordered these mandates. You made me take this COVID shot. You made me eat this unhealthy food because you didn't pass any regulations to keep these contaminants out of my water. So, yes, you can hold them accountable because of the way that they voted. So that is another huge thing that you can think about. And I know most people don't think that.
Sandy, I would like to speak something that I forgot to announce. That if there's anybody that's got a question or a comment that they would like to share, press *6 and 1, and you'll be in the queue. And then when we open up for a question, Phyllis will recognize you, and she'll give you the floor and give your first name and state, and then go ahead with your question. Try to stay on point. And we'll go from there. I yield.
Yes, and I would like to know if anybody had any questions or comments now, because I'm trying to present something as well as you are to get people to think and give them a very valuable tool that could be very valuable. And I know this is probably new to a lot of people, and a lot of people may not understand. So if there's any comments or questions, feel free, Phyllis, to put them on.
There isn't any questions at the moment.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll keep going. Well, this notice of liability, is you can send this to anybody, and that means anybody from a doctor to a clerk at the recording office to anybody at court. Me specifically, I would like to, well, I have targeted. I go back to the controlling entity, which is the one that controls basically everything, which is Congress, which is in the patent, in which they have oversight of the Patent and Trademark Office. Because going to a judge, a sheriff, well, attorneys, you can always call out attorneys because they're all the time doing stuff. And I would like to add this to what Daryl said. Whenever you do have an attorney, even if he is a court-appointed attorney, these attorneys have your personal information and what they do while they're trying to tell you how much money that you owe them for every minute of their time. They're over there cashing in on your private bonds. They have all of your information, and they will go cash in on your private bonds. I mean, how do you think attorneys get so rich? And their first allegiance is to England. The bar is in England, and their first allegiance is to the Bar Association, which is in England. They have no qualms about what they do to you, even though they may seem like they're helping you a little bit. They're actually cashing in on your intellectual property. So that was another thought that you can think about. But on this notice, I know they're kind of all over the place, but notice of liability, if you're going to do the notice of liability to put these people and hold them personally accountable for all their damages that they have done to you, you need to be specific and give names and titles. You know, like Judge, this is Judge Mark. You need to give Judge Mark on there. This is County Clerk Debbie. Whoever these people are and whatever their titles are, you need to name them out and give their names and their titles on this notice of liability to be specific to make sure that they receive this. And you need to be specific on which violations that they have violated on this notice of liability, so that when they read this, they're going to be in total shock. But these notice of liability goes back and it covers, I mean, this notice of liability is huge because it covers, it could cover basically everything from the financial institutions to government institutions. I mean, this is everybody and anybody, because all these institutions are trading and they're all benefiting from the securities off of your fraudulent birth certificate. And they're all subject to liens. And you have a lawful claim to go after them for all of these things. Is there any questions or comments on any of this yet?
Jealous, you got any questions? No.
Nope.
Okay.
And like I said, this notice of liability can be used even if you have been pulled over for any reason. If you have been in jail, because all of these institutions, all of these entities are engaged in transactions that are basically derived from your intellectual property. And most of them from your fraudulent birth certificates, which these are securities that are traded worldwide. So all of these transactions, and not only that, but they seized you, they used your birth certificate without your knowledge, which was an undisclosed agreement. They took your intellectual property, which was another undisclosed agreement. And they have been using it in transactions for their benefit. And you didn't know anything about it, even though you have been maybe suffering financially and you don't have a standing in court.
Okay, we now have two questions.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, the yes. First one's from John in Florida. Go ahead, John.
Go ahead, John.
John, you may be on.
Okay, sorry about that. Thank you, Phyllis.
Yeah, we hear you.
Uh-huh.
I totally agree with everything that Sandy's saying, and I can't tell you how many of these calls I've been on, probably thousands. The number one issue is all the courts are corrupt, all the judges are corrupt, all the lawyers are corrupt, the police are corrupt, some of the military is corrupt. Who is going to enforce whatever you put forward? And I yield.
Well, there's really kind of two ways that you could go about this, and first I'm going to go through this one first, And the first one would be like, okay, you've done the notice of liability where you're holding them responsible. Then you could do a notice of default. But I have been looking and researching, and this is what myself and my group are going to go forward on, is because you are traded internationally. I mean, your birth certificate and your intellectual property have been traded worldwide. You're everywhere. So
yes, I'm aware of that.
Yeah, you have the right to go to an international entity to get a judgment against the United States. And once you do that and bring it back, they have to answer it. They do not have a choice because it is an international. And there's two places that I know of. I'm going to do a lot more. We're eventually going to file on this, but I will have a lot more knowledge on this later on. But you can file in Switzerland and you can file in Belgium for this international claim.
Correct. The Postmaster General, I believe, overseas you can file with, but nobody enforces it because none of these people have any oaths and bonds to even be in office.
Mm-hmm.
I yield.
Well, one thing, Sandy, if I may.
Yeah.
You know, this is all a violation of the Law of Nations, Section 30. And we know that this country was, it began with the Constitution for the United States of America. And when these public officials violate the law of the land, which the Constitution in Article 6, Clause 2, states that the Constitution and all treaties made are the law of the land, is the supreme law of the land. And when
correct.
They violate the supreme law of the land, it is basically a capital offense. That's in Section 30 of the Law of Nations. And when they've drug us into an international setting. So where they have been monetizing these here securities and financial instruments through foreign financial institutions and monetizing it in that realm. And this has been, this is all part of this here effort to set up this one world system. But it's done worldwide. But as the people, we delegated the power to Congress. It was in Article 1, or the first section of the Constitution, Article 1, the first two lines, it said, you know, all powers granted, herein granted. It's the people that granted that authority to Congress. The created can never be greater than the creator. It's the people are the master, and they are the servants. And this is where we have to hold them to account. If they didn't take an oath of office, and I have not seen one oath that is in compliance with 5 U.S.C. 3331 and 3332 is the affidavit that must accompany that they didn't take a bribe to fill that office space. So if they don't have that proper oath of office, they're imitating an office. And basically they're really running a coup d'etat against the people and deceiving them as they are using this here credit of the people basically to pay these mercenaries or enforcement agents to carry out their orders through this here merchant court, which is basically a commerce court. It's, as you've heard, that all crimes are commercial, and they're dragging us into this commercial realm and holding us as that person that's been declared an enemy. And you know who's been controlling the courts? It's really controlled by the bar. They control the media. They control the banking. They control your county.
Everything.
Everything. So this is where, you know, we have to go back to enforce the supreme law of the land. but it's a start to who put this business model into effect and who approved it. It all goes back to Congress. And they made what was legal, you know, what was otherwise unlawful, they made it legal. And using legalese, trickery, and everything else, and using the, you know, media and whatever other sources are available to kind of get the people confused and distracted from what the real problem is and who the real culprits are that are implementing this against the people and basically abusing and trespassing upon our inherent rights and stealing our intellectual property, which are really those securities that are attached to that legal person, that in legis entity that was created at our birth. So with that, I yield.
Well, I found something very interesting today. I did find some other departments within the government that did sound a little bit promising, and one of them was the Foreign Claims Settlement Commission. There was one. There's another department that's called Access to Justice, which is for people that have not received justice. They have that department, and they have this one was probably one of my favorite ones, the Office of Professional Responsibility. And this was basically they come in and investigate and actually punish the conduct of the employee that is in violation of any of the regulations of professional misconduct. So there is things out there to help us. We just need to exercise our rights and go after them. That is something, and there again, and all of these offices that I just read off to you are out there for our benefit, but they also are all overseen by Congress, and Congress is that key. Congress is the one that oversees the Patent and Trademark Office, where these patents, trademarks, and copyrights are filed that have these undisclosed agreements on them that were drawn up by bar attorneys, where the bar attorney stepped in as the intermediary, as the third person in between us and the government or us and all the entities. In other words, they basically have taken over the government through these undisclosed agreements. Because if people were to actually read them, and I've shown this many times, the impeachable, irrevocable powers of attorney that these bar attorneys have inserted in these undisclosed agreements that are attached to something as simple as a simple trademark. And you may say, oh, a trademark like Coca-Cola. Okay, well, that's innocent enough. Yeah, but how many agreements are attached to Coca-Cola? It's just like Starbucks or Bank of America, their logo. Have you pulled them? Have you seen how many undisclosed agreements are attached to that one trademark that affects your life? I mean, they're on there. There's thousands of them in the Patent and Trademark Office, and nobody understands that. But, yes, there is things out there we can do. I yield. Go on to the next comment or question.
Okay. We'll go to Kent in New Jersey.
Yep.
Go ahead,
this is Kent.
Kent.
Yep. Thank you, folks. Can you hear me okay?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes, we can.
So, Sandy, I was going to ask basically the same question that John was asking, but I'd like you to explore it a little further. You just said there would be two ways to do this, and then you basically talked about an administrative method. If I recall correctly, last week when Derek was on, someone asked the question about enforcement, and he said that it was basically, and please correct me if I'm wrong or I misunderstood or I'm misstating the facts, he said basically it is a waste of time with the corrupt courts and the corrupt judges and the corrupt system that we have in place in most cases to even pursue the matter that way. that it really needs to be pursued administratively, but then get a final order out of the court when they have no more wiggle room or there's nothing they can do because you've done everything, dotted all the I's, crossed all the T's administratively. So is that where you were just leading in your answer to John with what was said last week administratively, number one? And number two, what is the other method, unless it was just you were going to say to use the court system, what was the second method that you said a few minutes ago would be another way of handling it? And with that, I yield. Thank you.
Okay. Well, if in answer to what you were saying about the administrative thing, the notice of default is basically the last step that you have done in your administrative process. And whenever you have got those notices back, that's when you would go to the court, take it to the court to get that judgment done. And it is done, and you don't have to, you're not filing anything in there. This is for a judge to rule on, because you've done everything administratively, so you're not filing another case. This will be done in the judge's chambers in a private judgment. And that's what I was saying, but you have to have all your paperwork. I mean, like, okay, everybody in my group, we've been in every court that there is to be in, and been some. The other thing that I was saying to get remedy on this is to file a claim internationally. You would file in Switzerland, and you would file in Belgium. That is what I was saying on the second remedy of that.
Sandy, giving notice and grace are the two biggest things in the administrative process. You give them notice, and that they have notice of the claim and the notice of liability, and then you give them the grace of time in order to respond. And when they do not respond as required, they go into default, and that's when you would file basically a default judgment against them. So I yield.
So, Sandy, do you know the rest of the procedure when one files internationally? Would one expect to have problems in those international courts also with them trying to protect the corporate entity commonly known as the United States?
No, I don't. And I do not have all of that process worked out yet. That is something that we're working on. I do know I have known people that did have great success filing internationally. So I'm not anticipating that there should be any problem as long as you have done your paperwork correctly. I do not foresee any problems, knowing that the people that have had success in it filing internationally compared to the problems that we face in the courts over here. But I will have that whole thing worked out with examples and everything. I just don't have it for tonight.
Okay. Thank you, Sandy, for your answer and your response. I appreciate it.
Yes, thank you, Kent.
Okay, that's the only question so far. We might have more later.
Oh, yeah. Okay, going back to our tool in the toolbox, which was the notice of liability. I mean, I think that is a huge tool, and I have been extremely grateful that we have this tool to be able to use to correct some of these violations that have occurred against us. And I'm sure everybody, I don't know where everybody stands. I don't know if people are still standing in court, if people are still, if some people are still facing jail or in jail. This notice of liability is very huge, and you can.
You You broke up a little bit, Sandy.
Can you hear me better now?
That's a little better, but you're still breaking a little bit.
Oh, I don't know what's wrong. But the most important, is that better?
That's better, yes.
The most important thing when you do this, you can't just go filling your name in or filling in the blanks and file something unless you have the whole history. Okay, why am I filing this, and what is this filing going to accomplish for me? I mean, you have to be totally grounded in it and do your homework on it, or, you know, it could go sideways on you if you don't totally understand it. And I think that's an important part of this whole process, is people understanding that they have to understand the tool they're using and who they are and why they're filing it. On that, do you have anything to add on that, Daryl?
Well, not really. You know, setting it up, you know, and identifying, you know, what they did, their requirements to their key obligation, which is their oath. That's their connection to the people. And they're required to operate within the authority that's granted and delegated to them in the Constitution. And, you know, when they didn't take the proper oath, you know, they're going to have all kinds of excuses why, you know, they took an oath to the wrong Constitution. But really, this whole thing is operating as a corporation, really a private corporation in that realm. And they all know that, and they're holding us in this capacity as that legal fiction. And I don't know that they could actually deny that, that they don't know that they're holding us. Well, you got to make sure you spell that name in all capital letters. Well, what's the use? Well, that's just the way the computer prints it out. Well, these are all programs, as we've been programmed to think that it's one and the same, but they're using a style manual. They use the government style manual to identify the different status. And this was really implemented in 1868, when they brought in the 14th Amendment, where all persons born are naturalized and subject to the jurisdiction thereof. So that subject to the jurisdiction thereof is really the one that tries to hook you into that acknowledgement under the presumption that you are that person. And, you know, even though they're looking at it as, well, you're claiming that you're that one and the same as the entity that was basically warehoused in the District of Columbia. So they're trying to identify you as a United States citizen or a citizen of the District of Columbia in reality. And they look at it one and the same, but it's used as a trick. And where they took away the elector status from the people and turn them into voters. And this was done in the 15th Amendment when they brought that in 1871, right before the Reconstruction Act, where when you fill out a voter's registration form, what are the first two questions that you're asked? Are you over 18 years of age? And are you a U.S. citizen? And when you check those boxes, well, you're acknowledging that you're that entity, that you're voting as that entity. And I had this was a guard that was a level 5 guard at a prison. And anyway, we had a little discussion about an issue. And, you know, I was, you know, telling them that they had no jurisdiction over this here bankruptcy matter. And he asked me two questions. He said, did you vote? Are you registered to vote? And when I said yes, he said they had jurisdiction, and he would not budge off of that position. But the whole thing is this is their presumption that they hold you to, because when you registered, you did that willingly. And when you voted, you checked those boxes. That's the only way that ballot would be accepted. And so these are the traps that we get brought into, just like getting a driver license to travel. You're asked these same questions. But they will not issue you a driver license as a living man or woman. They'll only issue that to that entity, because that entity is declared an enemy of the United States, and the only way that that entity can do anything is through license or permission. So it's a little trickery scheme that, you know, is just commonly used, and everybody says, well, that's just what you got to do. You know, that piece of plastic didn't make you any safer on the road than without it. But, I mean, it is good to have a little bit of training behind you, you know, that you can skillfully drive and not, and you basically respect others that are using the same common way. So, but, you know, just to be aware of the status that you aren't that entity, but you have one. You have a person, but you're not it. But yet they try to hold you under the presumption that it's one and the same. So with that, I yield.
Yes, and that is very true, and that's why it is so important to understand about everything that you do. But you also need to understand who is the powerful one. Where does all of this start, and who has the power to change it, which is Congress. I mean, you go back to Congress. I mean, Congress was, they were the ones that were responsible for the financial fall in 2008. Congress was basically the reason why all of these tent cities and all these foreclosures happened, because Congress repealed the last part of the Glass-Steagall Act. They blocked any regulations of derivatives. They preempted the state consumer protection laws. Congress has balanced accounting so that they can escape any accountability for anything. They gave up all the... They let banks self-regulate themselves. So you can see Congress does know what's going on, and they are the ones. They oversee the Patent and Trademark Office, where all these patents and trademarks are registered with these undisclosed agreements on them that have terms and conditions in them that affect basically everything that you do that you don't know anything about. And these bar attorneys are the ones that drew up this paperwork that inserted these powers of attorney in these agreements. And basically these powers of attorney say that you gave them permission to act on your behalf when you really didn't, because you didn't know anything about it. And that's how they get away with it. They basically put this in there so that when you try to bring this stuff up as being illegal or fraudulent or whatever, well, they go, well, no, it's not, because here's this agreement over here and there's a power of attorney, and it clearly states that you gave up these rights. And you knew nothing about it because it was an undisclosed agreement. But it goes back to the bar attorneys. And everywhere, even if you go somewhere to file a document or go file something almost anywhere, oh, well, I have to have the legal department look at it. Well, there's a reason for that, because the legal department is going to be the gatekeeper that's going to block you out.
Okay, we have another question.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
Okay. Please state your name and your state that you're from, please. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Ed. I'm from Atlanta, Georgia.
Okay.
And my question was for the gentleman that she was just talking to. He said when he went into court, the court asked him two questions. The first question and the only question I heard him say was, did you vote or are you a voter? Can I ask what the second question was? I believe his name was Daryl.
Yeah, he basically asked me, are you registered to vote? And then he said, did you vote? And I said, yes. And he would not budge off of that position. He said they had jurisdiction. And
yeah, do you know why that is?
They're holding you basically as a member of this here corporation.
When you signed, well, let me say it again. When you voluntarily signed your voter registration card to vote, you proclaimed that you were a U.S. citizen.
Correct.
Otherwise mm-hmm. known as a federal citizen.
Correct.
So
that is in the registration part of it. Yes.
Right. And so that's why they made that presumption in court. Anyway, I thought maybe there was another question like, you know, are you a U.S. citizen? Or, you know, he might have said something else to try to trip you up. But I'm assuming you got out of the voter registration by now.
Yeah, well, I did it back then. That was 30 years ago.
You know, I'd just like to add this, too, because I agree with everything that the young lady is saying. But I would like to say this to the group. I asked this question. How many people do you know that don't have a birth certificate? And nobody really knows anybody that doesn't have a birth certificate. So then I asked, well, since it's on bond paper and it looks like a security, how come you don't go into a probate court in the county you were born, which handles wills and estates, and claim to be the rightful heir to that piece of paper? All you have to do is make the claim.
Yeah, I do know two, three people that did not register their child. They drew up their own birth certificate and took the afterbirth home. But this becomes kind of controversial when there's school and all this stuff involved. And I know a man
I'm talking about us. I'm talking about everybody on this phone as adults. How come you don't get a certified copy of the birth certificate and go to the probate court and claim that estate? That's all you really have to do. And then they got a real problem.
I think that is appropriate.
I can probably enlighten you a little bit on that. It's there again that the bar attorneys have stepped in. And I would have to go back and do a lot of research on that particular thing. But the bar attorneys, basically, they control everything that goes on in the court. And all of those courts operate on a business model or business models that are, because everything pretty much is an automated process, too. But they operate on business models that are filed in the patent and trademark office. And I can say I do not know anybody that has had any success of going to a probate court with their birth certificate. I don't know. Is anybody else on this call? Do you know anybody that has had success of doing that process?
Well, you can, because it's got your name on it, and that it's got your estate name on it, and that at least gives you equitable title. But you need to put something with the birth certificate, and that's the 1907 Birth Registration Act. And in the 1907 Birth Registration Act, in the fourth paragraph, it says if the baby be not stillborn, which means born dead, then the mother or father over their signature have to alert the health officer so that they can correct their record. And nobody does that. and no hospital offers that document. It's been hidden from us all. So if you take that in with the birth certificate and say, hey, look, the way I read this, as an infant that was born and without the administrative record being corrected, that means I'm a decedent estate, or at least this piece of paper is, and I'm the rightful heir to this estate. So I'm claiming it. Not I'm petitioning or any of that other stuff. And when you talk about the state bar, let me tell you something. They have no standing in probate court. The attorney general can't send an assistant down and, or can't come themselves unless they have some interest in that case. And if they claim to have interest in my birth certificate, I'd sure like to know what it is.
Mm-hmm. Have you done that?
Yes, I have. And let me tell you, you need to have a living will too. So you need to create a living will, and that lets them know that you're living. I think it's 31 CFR 363.27 that says you can be a minor under the age of 18 and you can be a minor over the age of 18. The ones that are presumed a minor over the age of 18 are the ones that have not yet claimed their estate.
We need to get more details on that.
Well, this is my first time on the call. Actually, I think Daryl, I responded with some information to it. I got an email from him earlier. So, I sent a response back to Daryl. Daryl Link?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, if you would send another email, I get so far behind, sometimes I can't keep up. So if I don't respond, you know, it's not because I didn't intend, or I intended to. It's just that I didn't get at it.
Well, you should actually, if you can find it, Daryl, it's from the email you sent earlier. You sent it to 7 or 8 people. If you can find it, there's some things in there that you might want to make your group aware of. I just came in to see. I have a couple of friends in here, really good friends in here, and they suggested that I come on. And I tried to connect on Zoom, and it wouldn't. It kept telling me it was the wrong code, and I didn't realize it was the free conference call. So anyway, after I got that straightened out, I got in late. I heard the young lady talking about a notice of liability. What would help greatly in that, especially when you're talking about judges and attorneys, or really anyone in government, the Foreign Agent Registration Act of 1938 as amended. That's definitely something that you want to, because she's right. They're trading these securities all over the world, and there is teeth in the Foreign Agent Registration Act. If you read the form that they're supposed to fill out, you can actually go to a database on that site and put in the judge's name or the employee's name, and it will tell you if they filed or not. And if they haven't filed their statement with the Foreign Agent Registration Act of 1938 as amended, then they got a lot of trouble. And so it's not just bonds and oaths. It's also that foreign registration. In other words, do they have the right to participate on American soil as a foreign agent? And all bar members are foreign agents.
Absolutely.
So anyway, I just wanted to add that that little piece to the group. I'm going to shut up now. But yeah, just it's your property. Make the claim.
Okay.
What's the worst thing they can do? Tell you no. Well, now they got a problem because they got to tell you why they won't allow you to claim your property with your all caps name on it, which you obviously have equitable interest in.
Right.
I once asked a judge in court, right out of the gate, Your Honor, is there an estate being administered here in this case or controversy today, yes or no? He said, I don't answer questions. I said, well, you must be a foreign agent, because under U.S. versus Holzer, it says that all public officers are public servants and trustees of the American people, which is me. So either answer my question or go get me a public servant that will.
How did he follow up on that one?
He adjourned. Actually, he ran off the bench. I'm just saying that there are all we got to do is be smarter than they are. That's all we got to do. They've got it all in the code. One of the things that I sent you, Daryl, is OCGA 50-2-22. And that's that every state has this code. It says that property ceded to the United States for government purposes. And in Georgia, I'll read it to you real quick. I got it right here. OCGA 50-2-22, usually in the administrative code or the government code, says the state of Georgia hereby cedes to the United States jurisdiction over any land now owned or hereafter acquired by the United States in this state for sites, for dockyards, custom houses, courthouses, post offices, customs houses, and other needful buildings. Now, the word you should have picked up there is courthouses. It doesn't say federal courthouses. It doesn't say state courthouses. It says courthouses. So, like, all the courthouses in the state of Georgia have been ceded to the United States. So what good does it do any of us to have a state court that's sitting on federal land? Absolutely none. It's called operating in mixed and multiple jurisdictions, which is exactly what I would expect a bunch of private bar business attorneys to do when they're inside that bar. It's just private bar business. That's all it is. And everything's commercial. Everything's commercial. Erie Railroad versus Tompkins in 1937 said it gave the court two powers. It gave them the power of presumption, and it made everything a contract. You should go back and read it if you haven't. It changed everything. That's the case. Erie Railroad versus Tompkins. Thompkins. But mixed in multiple jurisdictions, you cannot get a remedy in a court, state or federal, that's operating in mixed and multiple jurisdictions. It's impossible. In other words, what I just told you is, I think if you go look up Article 4, Section 3, Clause 2, I'll just read it to you because I know it by heart. Article 4, Section 3, Clause 2 of the 1787 Constitution and the 1791 Bill of Rights. I call it the primary contract in its original jurisdiction. But it says that Congress shall have the power to dispose of and make all needful rules and regulations respecting the territory or other property belonging to the United States. In this sense, the United States is a federal municipal corporation. And nothing in this Constitution shall be so construed as to prejudice any claims of the United States or of any particular state. And they do it all through Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17, otherwise known as the Commerce Clause. So if Congress makes all the needful rules and regulations for state courts, then what are the codes and statutes of the state? What are they actually? They're public policy. There's no law that says that I must adhere to public policy.
From a legal
fiction. And with that, I'll yield.
From a legal fiction,
yes.
At that. But
yes.
Really what they're doing is they're bringing a mixed war, basically operating against the people. They're personating the people as if they're this entity. And then they're dragging us into this here, basically this commerce court or merchant law court, setting, you know, as that property that's considered chattel by presumption, where they replace the gold by using that as the securities. And It is really a trap. It is really treason against the people and the Constitution. But yet, it's been put forth as a business model through the Patent and Trademark Office, and Congress is hereby responsible for that happening and continuing on, and to exercise that war power against the ones that give them the grant of delegated power to hold that office. But
what's funny, if you dig a little deeper into what you just said about the war powers, and of course that started with FDR back in 1933 when they confiscated the gold. But what Congress did in 1933 is they went back to the 1917 Trading with the Enemy Act that specifically foreclosed U.S. citizens from being in that act, and they amended Section 5B to now include all persons or citizens of the United States within the outer boundaries of the United States. So they included them, but they did it ex post facto, which means they went back in time from 1933 to 1917 to make us all enemies of the state.
Correct. They made the person the enemy. And
that's right. But it's also the person that they're administering, the estate.
And that's the con job that has really pulled the wool over the eyes of most.
I'll go even a little deeper. The person is actually an office. It's actually the office of the person. And in the office of the person, which all their public policy is written around, and defined as, the office of the person is a subject. That's what they are. They're a subject. In other words, I've been to thousands of arraignments where the last question a judge will ask before he pronounces a sentence is, are you a U.S. citizen? And without fail, 99% of the people say yes. I'm out here, and you guys are out there, so I'm calling it 1% that are smart enough to never claim that they're a citizen of the United States. That's a federal citizen, and we're all state citizens of the American Union, of one of the several states of the American Union. What did they call citizens prior to the passage of the 14th War Amendment? They didn't call them citizens of the United States. They called them state citizens with a capital C. That group of people were disenfranchised with the 14th War Amendment. Here's another thing. Everybody wonders about that flag sitting over the shoulder of the to the right of the judge. Three sides, yellow fringe. My father was in the Honor Guard. That is the same flag that he flew in the Honor Guard for the Army, and it's the same exact flag that we put in every forward war area, no matter where we're at. The flag is the vessel. So the smart thing to do if you've got a case that you're trying to win is go to Amazon, and for like $39, you can buy a civil peace flag. Take that flag and drape it over the defense table or the podium or whatever it is. Get a smaller flag and tape it to your shirt. So if I'm flying the civil peace flag inside the bar where they're conducting private bar business, and they're conducting an administrative proceeding over my estate, let's say they call it a crime, whatever it might be. If I come in there and I drape the flag, what's the difference between a draped flag and a flag on a pole? A flag on a pole is a war flag. A draped civil peace flag is a sovereign flag. Draped, not pulled. So you lay that down, and this is what I suggest to people. Get a $5 piece of pre-1933 gold sitting on top of that, minted in the United States prior to 1933. Go over to the National Archivist, call him up and tell him you want a certified archivist, National Archivist copy of the 1787 Constitution and the 1791 Bill of Rights, and tell the judge that that is your political choice of law to govern all your rights and duties, and then hand them to the bailiff and tell them you want to present them to the evidence over any objections. That works like a charm because, number one, is your right. You may think about it this way. You make your political choice on who you're going to vote for. You make your political choice on what kind of money that you're going to use, although they've relegated us all to just really one form, legal currency that discharges obligations, but it never pays any debt. That's the Federal Reserve note. You take the piece of gold, you take the National Archives certified copy of the 1787 Constitution and the 1791 Bill of Rights, and you tell the judge, Your Honor, I would like to invoke my own political choice of law. I have two properly certified documents listed as Exhibit A and Exhibit B. One's the 1787 Constitution. One's the 1791 Bill of Rights, otherwise known as the primary contract in its original jurisdiction. And I would like to use these pieces of paper. I'd like to submit them into evidence. You have to submit them into evidence. I'd like to submit them into evidence as my political choice of law over any objections. Out of all the people that have done this, do you know how many times the prosecuting attorney has objected? Zero, because they can't. And how do I know you have your own political choice of law? Marbury versus Madison is the case. It says that if there's two sources to this. Marbury versus Madison says you can either decide a case by the law or you can decide a case by the Constitution. But if you use one, then you forego the other. I'm paraphrasing, but essentially that's what it says. And then the other is in the in Public Law 88-243, otherwise known as the Uniform Commercial Code. And in Section 1-105, if you look it up, the current version you have in your state, it's going to say the severability clause, which is one of those clauses that says, if I use this, or something in here is found to be unconstitutional, then everything else still applies, except for this. Well, if you make the supreme law of the land, you're under your own political choice, which only you can make your political choices, as your choice of law to govern all your rights and duties, you're good. But to show you how corrupt they are, you look in your current code, UCC 1-105 is going to say severability. In the original 1963 version, in the federal version of the code, the title is this: territorial jurisdiction, semicolon, parties' power to choice of law. They hid it from you. So anyway, that's probably about as much as I can help tonight. But I appreciate you inviting me onto your call.
I appreciate your contribution. It's most welcome. But even the first paragraph of the UN Charter, it says that everyone has the right to make their own political determination. And I guess I choose to be non-political. And but anyway, it all really opens up. You know, when you hear these things, and it's just to do the research and to break through the crust. I mean, the deeper you go, the more it's all laid out. It's just that it's been hidden in plain sight, where, you know, that people aren't doing the research that is necessary, or most people, the majority. You know, they've got everybody running, chasing their tail, and you know, involved in all these sports and whatever else, rather than studying. And I know in the school, you know, that, you know, in through the high school years, the Constitution was never brought up as a topic. to study from and how it applies and how it limits the authority of government, of our elected officials. So this is what we have to, you know, try to re-educate enough people that we can once again restore the intent of those four organic documents, you know, in compliance with the laws of nature and nature's God. Because that's where it's there for our protection from these people, of the overreach of those that are sitting in these offices.
Okay, we've got some more questions.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, the next one is from Mike Lerman in California.
Go ahead, Mike. Are you muted on your end? We can't hear you, Mike.
Okay, we'll go to Tony then in Missouri for now.
Go ahead, Tony. Tony, are you muted on your end?
Yeah, no, I'm here. Yeah, sorry, I was running so late.
We hear you. Go ahead.
Wait a minute. We lost him there for a second. Let me make sure he's unmuted on our end.
Well, he was. Tony, we can't hear you. I don't know if you can hear us.
I think he fell off the call, which he shouldn't. Here he is. Hold on a second. Go ahead.
All right. There you
are. Thank you. Yeah. No, mm-hmm. That usually is my fault, but at this time I didn't know what to do. Anyway, I think after everything that just went down, what I was going to bring in here was regarding what Sandy and Daryl were talking about with some other things. I don't know how much sense or what part of that conversation will still be in people's minds at this point in time. But, you know, listening to Sandy again talk about the notice of liability and the importance of it, basically it gives us the ability to hold our legislators, our, you know, Congress, the senators, you know, these people liable for their actions. If they're doing things that are outside of the scope of what they're supposed to be doing, I mean, you know, there are very strict rules about what they can and cannot do as far as, harming their own citizens with their actions. And if you can document basically how you were harmed by their actions, you can put that down on paper, it's an incredibly useful tool. I would, I don't know if it was brought up because I got into the conversation late today about utilizing a perjury affidavit as part of that. Because, you know, if you file this notice of liability against these people for specific things and they won't perjure themselves because they'll be basically perjuring themselves before Congress or, you know, before a judge or whatever, that they're going to take that risk. But, the things that got us into this, what we were looking at, were not like small scale things. I know from my own personal standpoint, being in Missouri, that a state senator right now was the attorney general for the state of Missouri at the time when we went through all the stuff that, you know, the economic collapse, the bank collapse, all the stuff with MERS, and, how that all evolved and where all that money went. Now, there was a settlement between the government and MERS for like $25 billion, and that money was supposed to go to the victims of what happened. Not one penny of that money went to anyone that lost a home in any of this stuff. This all went to government officials, things like that. These are the kind of things that were taken out against the specific people that don't have to have a hand in, you know, bringing this to fruition, as long as they turned a blind eye and did nothing to stop it. And that's exactly where we're at with these people, because they are involved in this, in this process. They have, you know, violated our rights, our constitutional rights, our God-given rights, and you know, they chose to do it for profit. They all got paid. They all got bond money for what they're doing, and you know, they stole our properties in the process. So, you know, and they used governmental processes to do it. I mean, they basically just sat there and said, oh, well, you know, we're this and we're that, and you can't touch us. And that, again, is another violation. And so once you put that down on paper, I mean, you got to know what you're talking about, as always, with all this stuff. You can't just jump in there and throw out blind accusations. But more often than not, it's not all that hard to get the information you're looking for. It's usually leave it draped right out there, especially on things like this, because they never thought they'd get called on it. But all of a sudden, 100 million people that lost their homes said, hey, you know what? We're going to do something about this. So this is what they've done. They took money that was earmarked, secured through governmental process, that was earmarked for certain victims of things, the way they went down. And they, you know, in that process, violated all our rights and put us in a place where we were subject to and are still subject to these improper, illegal, irrevocable schemes, these irrevocable policies, you know, the things that they put us in there, where we supposedly have signed away, without knowledge, all of our rights. We have signed into these agreements, undisclosed agreements, and you know, that gives them, supposedly, you know, the right to do whatever, have autonomy in taking all our property. We've talked before about the SF-95. It's in a process that gives you know, power and authority to the people to file against their oppressors, to come back and again, you know, go against these government agencies and government personalities that have done this. You know, there's a process out there where you can bring this up. Again, you need to be very specific about what you're doing with this, what you're filing for, what you're filing against. But, you know, basically, we've all been harmed by this stuff. And if you can show how and where we have, now the benefit of the SF-95, and it's what we've worked on with the USPTO in the past, is that, you know, they have X amount of time to respond. You know, we went into this thinking it was 21 days. Okay, well, found out it's not 21 days. It's actually 6 months.
Well,
but at the end of that six-month period, if they do not respond, which they will not respond, you have the right to take this directly to federal court. Not to, you know, you don't have to jump through a bunch of hoops in your county and your state and whatever, and you know, try to protect your constitutional rights, and try to push it to a constitutional court, you know, even if that's to go to the Supreme Court. But they give up that right to have you be able to, you know, that you have the right to do that, that to get straight there. If they don't respond, that's where we're at, you know, not with what we're doing with that. You know, someone that was talking earlier said something about everything is commercial, everything is in commerce, okay? And that's exactly why the USPTO falls under the Department of Commerce, why they have the same director of Commerce and director of the USPTO. They are hand in hand, directly related, and that basically is how they generate their own income. Again, we've gone through this. They tell us they don't care. You know, we can go to appropriations, we can go to this, we can go to that. They don't care because they're going to lose their funding. They make their own money. But when you keep telling people that, you know, sooner or later people are going to want to know, where does it come from? How do you get it? And it's where we are right now. They're trafficking us in our life's energy to be able to take this away. You know, this is what they're doing. This is how they generate their own income through us. And it's not just on a national level. It's on an international level and worldwide level. So, just a couple things I wanted to touch on earlier conversations anyway. And, you know, I don't have a whole lot more than that right now. So
okay.
With that, I'll yield.
Well, thanks, Tony. Phyllis, we had another question.
Yeah, let me see if Mike is listening now. Mike Lerman, did you have a comment or question?
Mike, are you muted on your end? Well, apparently not.
He must be on a phone call or something. Also, Sherry Benton had a question. Sherry, did you still want to ask a question?
I will. Yes, I'm here. I'm going to go back to Ed's call and write this down. It's 31 CFR section 363.6. Minor means an individual under the age of 18 years. The term minor is also used to refer to an individual who has attained the age of 18 years, but has not yet taken control of the securities contained in his or her minor account.
Okay.
So, and that's what they're controlling us with.
Well, I think...
Anyway.
I think, you know, taking it to the probate court, and as was mentioned earlier,
mm-hmm.
I think there's a real question to get settled. So,
correct. He had a lot of valuable information, and I don't mean to, you know, take away from Sandy. And
okay.
So,
okay,
but I just wanted to put that out there, and I read it to you exactly what it says. And anyway, there you go. Thank you. I appreciate you all.
And
thank you.
Anyway, we're kind of getting to the end of our call. So next week we're going to have Ed George, and he's going to be talking about life, liberty, property, and the pursuit of happiness and the law of the land. And Ed does a lot of research, and he shares that with us. And so, and then on the 28th, which is that Thursday, we're going to talk about the connection of the patent and trademark, and you know how that business model affects you in your everyday life. And then on the 2nd of September, we're going to have an open forum, and with question and answers. So if there's anybody has questions about any of this stuff, we'll try to have an open discussion and bring it forward so everybody knows the key to this here way the system operates so they can be set free. So with that, if there's anybody that's new on the call that does not receive the notices for the Tuesday or Thursday night calls and would like to receive them, you can send Phyllis an email. She'll give that out in a little bit. She'll want your first name, your state, who invited to the call, and the phone number. We do not share any contact information with you, but if somebody would want to reach out to you, they'll send Phyllis an email, and she will forward that on to you, and it'll be up to you to respond to them at your convenience. So, Phyllis, you want to give out your email?
Yes, and I would like to comment on Ed, who spoke earlier. You know, there's probably going to be a lot of questions that people will have of the information you gave out. If you are willing, send me an email and let me know how we can get in touch with you if you're willing to answer any questions. My email address is blueridge1121@gmail.com. blueridge1121@gmail.com. And we also have a caller on here this evening that is not identified. Wireless caller, your phone number ends in 0765. I'm going to unmute you if you would at least give us your first name and your state.
Yes, my name is Gary, and I'm from Alabama. I was invited by Ed.
Okay, good. Good to have you guys on board here tonight. You're from what state?
Alabama.
Alabama.
Okay, Alabama. Thank you. And I think I had one more on here. And Cheryl Kissel, I see you're on the call. Thanks for coming on. Another caller, your phone ends in 1667. Do we have your first name and state, please? Oh, let me unmute you. You probably can't tell me. Okay, now. Who has
John,
the
Minnesota.
Number? John in Minnesota. Okay, thank you. And that's all, Daryl.
Okay. Well, we want to thank everyone for coming on the call. Had a lot of good information that is very applicable to this day and time. And we want to encourage you to go to the website and share this information far and wide so that people become aware of what has enslaved them all their life. And that website is USAorganicRepublic.com. And Republic is spelled with a CK at the end. And the reason for that is that was the 1755 Johnson's Dictionary that was used at the time when this country was being founded. And they had it spelled with a CK. Again, that website is USAorganicRepublic.com. And we would like this here, you know, people to become aware of it, that they'd have access to the replays and all the documents that are shared. So, again, we want to thank everyone for coming on the call, and especially for everyone that had contributed with the questions, and especially for Ed for the things that he has shared. It is was a wealth of information. So we need to continue to break down these walls of separation, and we need to start uniting as one body, because united we stand, divided we fall. And the whole thing is that, you know, so many different groups are so splintered off. But if we unite in the author and the truth that has been given to us, that we can be strong and this country can be restored back to the intent of those four organic laws and in accordance with the laws of nature and nature's God. And with that, I would just like to touch on a few verses from Scripture. In Zechariah chapter 8, verse 16, it says, "These are things that ye shall do. Speak truth to his neighbor. Execute the judgment of truth and peace in your gates." And that really goes along with Psalms 149, verses. I'll just start here with verse 7. It says, "To execute vengeance upon the heathen and punishments upon the people, and bind their kings with chains, and their noble with fetters of iron, to execute upon them the judgment written. This honor have all his saints. Praise ye the Lord." And to kind of sum it all up, It's summed up in Romans chapter 13, verse 10. It says, verse 10, it says, love worketh no ill to his neighbor. Therefore, love is the fulfillment of the law. And we know that the problems we're facing today are the same problems from thousands of years back. But we have different time, spaces, faces, and circumstances. But the core of the problem is the same. And when the Christ threw over the tables in the temple, it was the money changers. And this is the same problems we're having today, and that's what's financing all this here. It's the love of money is the root of all evil. So with that, we'll just close in a little word of prayer. Heavenly Father, we come before you to thank you, Lord, for the truth that you have revealed in your word as it is written. We just ask you, Lord, to prepare our hearts and minds for this battle, that you'll help us to be confident in your truth, that we can apply it and execute the judgment of truth as it is written. We ask you, Lord, to strengthen us and to draw us close to one another as one body in an effort to implement the truth that you have provided for us, that we know right from wrong, as you said, that that we are to show ourselves approved as a workman, rightfully dividing the word of truth. And we know, Lord, that you said your word is sharper than a two-edged sword. It'll either take you to judgment or it'll take you to salvation. We ask you, Lord, for a spiritual awakening in this nation. We just ask you, Lord, to awaken the people, that they come out of their hypnotism or their brainwashing that has been indoctrinated from our youth. And we ask you, Lord, to help us to share these truths with one another, that we can once again be recognized as being one nation under God with liberty and justice for all. We just thank you, Lord, for each and every one on this call this evening. We thank you for all the information that was contributed. We ask you, Lord, that you'll help us to share it far and wide, that we can bring about a spiritual awakening for your glory. We just commit all things into your hands and ask that you continue to prepare the way before us and deliver us from these forces of darkness that has deceived so many. And we just ask all this in the name of Yeshua, and let it be so. Amen.